Chapter 3. Duty by her, and to consider that she ought to have better teaching than I could give her. It drew a many tears on both sides when I commenced explaining my views to her. But what's right is right, and you can't neither by tears nor laughter do away with its character. So I took her hand in mine, and I went with her one day to the deaf and dumb establishment in London, and when the gentleman come to speak to us, I says to him, "Now I'll tell you what I'll do with you, sir. I am nothing but a cheap jack, but of late years I have laid by for a rainy day notwithstanding. This is my only daughter adopted, and you can't produce a deafer nor a dumber. Teach her the most that can be taught her in the shortest separation that can be named, state the figure for it, and I am game to put the money down. I won't bait you a single farthing, sir, but I'll put down the money here and now, and I'll thankfully throw you in a pound to take it." There. The gentleman smiled, and then, well, says he, "I must first know what she has learned already. How do you communicate with her?" Then I showed him, and she wrote in printed writing many names of things and so forth. And we held some sprightly conversation, Sophie and me, about a little story in a book which the gentleman showed her, and which she was able to read. "This is most extraordinary," says the gentleman. "Is it possible that you have been her only teacher?" "I have been her only teacher, sir," I says, "besides herself." "Then," says the gentleman, "and more acceptable words was never spoke to me, you're a clever fellow, and a good fellow." This he makes known to Sophie, who kisses his hands, claps her own, and laughs and cries upon it. We saw the gentleman 4 times in all, and when he took down my name and asked how in the world it ever chanced to be doctor, it come out that he was own nephew by the sister's side, if you'll believe me, to the very doctor that I was called after. This made our footing still easier, and he says to me, "Now, Marigold, tell me what more do you want your adopted daughter to know?" "I want her, sir, to be cut off from the world as little as can be, considering her deprivations, and therefore to be able to read whatever is wrote with perfect ease and pleasure." "My good fellow," urges the gentleman, opening his eyes wide, "why, I can't do that myself." I took his joke, and gave him a laugh, knowing by experience how flat you fall without it, and I mended my words accordingly. "What do you mean to do with her afterwards?" asks the gentleman, with a sort of a doubtful eye. "To take her about the country?" "In the cart, sir, but only in the cart. She will live a private life, you understand, in the cart. I should never think of bringing her infirmities before the public. I wouldn't make a show of her for any money." The gentleman nodded, and seemed to approve. "Well," says he, "can you part with her for 2 years?" "To do her that good, yes, sir." "There's another question," says the gentleman, looking towards her, "can she part with you for 2 years? I don't know that it was a harder matter of itself, for the other was hard enough to me, but it was harder to get over. However, she was pacified to it at last, and the separation betwixt us was settled. How it cut up both of us when it took place, and when I left her at the door in the dark of an evening, I don't tell. But I know this. Remembering that night, I shall never pass that same establishment without a heartache and a swelling in the throat. And I couldn't put you up the best of lots in sight of it with my usual spirit, no, not even the gun, nor the pair of spectacles, for £500 reward from the Secretary of State for the Home Department, and throw in the honor of putting my legs under his mahogany afterwards." Still, the loneliness that followed in the cart was not the old loneliness, because there was a term put to it, however long to look forward to. And because I could think, when I was anyways down, that she belonged to me, and I belonged to her. Always planning for her coming back, I bought in a few months' time another cart, and what do you think I planned to do with it? I'll tell you. I planned to fit it up with shelves and books for her reading, and to have a seat in it, where I could sit and see her read, and think that I had been her first teacher. Not hurrying over the job, I had the fittings knocked together in contriving ways under my own inspection, and here was her bed in a berth with curtains, and there was her reading table, and here was her writing desk, and elsewhere was her books in rows upon rows, pictures and no pictures, bindings and no bindings, gilt-edged and plain, just as I could pick 'em up for her in lots up and down the country, north, and south and west and east, winds like best and winds like least, here and there and gone astray, over the hills and far away. And when I had got together pretty well as many books as the cart would neatly hold, a new scheme come into my head, which, as it turned out, kept my time and attention a good deal employed, and helped me over the 2 years' stile. Without being of an auricious temper, I like to be the owner of things. I shouldn't wish, for instance, to go partners with yourself in the cheap jack cart. It's not that I mistrust you, but that I'd rather know it was mine. Similarly, very likely you'd rather know it was yours. Well, a kind of a jealousy began to creep into my mind when I reflected that all those books would have been read by other people long before they was read by her. It seemed to take away from her being the owner of them like. In this way, the question got into my head. Couldn't I have a book new made express for her, which she should be the first to read? It pleased me, that thought did, and as I never was a man, to let a thought sleep, you must wake up all the whole family of thoughts you've got, and burn their nightcaps, or you won't do in the cheap jack line. I set to work at it. Considering that I was in the habit of changing so much about the country, and that I should have to find out a literary character here to make a deal with, and another literary character there to make a deal with, as opportunities presented, I hit on the plan that this same book should be a general miscellaneous lot, like the razors, flat iron, chronometer watch, dinner plates, rolling pin, and looking glass, and shouldn't be offered as a single individual article, like the spectacles or the gun. When I had come to that conclusion, I come to another, which'll likewise be yours. Often had I regretted that she never had heard me on the footboard, and that she never could hear me. It ain't that I am vain, but that you don't like to put your own light under a bushel. What's the worth of your reputation, if you can't convey the reason for it to the person you most wish to value it? Now I'll put it to you. Is it worth sixpence, fivepence, fourpence, threepence, twopence, a penny, a halfpenny, a farthing? No, it ain't. Not worth a farthing. Very well, then. My conclusion was that I would begin her book with some account of myself. So that, through reading a specimen or two of me on the footboard, she might form an idea of my merits there. I was aware that I couldn't do myself justice. A man can't write his eye, at least I don't know how to, nor yet can a man write his voice, nor the rate of his talk, nor the quickness of his action, nor his general spicy way. But he can write his terms of speech, when he is a public speaker, and indeed I have heard that he very often does, before he speaks them. Well, having formed that resolution, then come the question of a name. How did I hammer that hot iron into shape? This way. The most difficult explanation I had ever had with her was, how I come to be called doctor, and yet was no doctor. After all, I felt that I had failed of getting it correctly into her mind, with my utmost pains. But trusting to her improvement in the 2 years, I thought that I might trust to her understanding it, when she should come to read it as put down by my own hand. Then I thought I would try a joke with her, and watch how it took, by which of itself I might fully judge of her understanding it. We had first discovered the mistake we had dropped into, through her having asked me to prescribe for her, when she had supposed me to be a doctor in a medical point of view. So thinks I, now, if I give this book the name of my prescriptions, and if she catches the idea that my only prescriptions are for her amusement and interest, to make her laugh in a pleasant way, or to make her cry in a pleasant way, it will be a delightful proof to both of us that we have got over our difficulty. It fell out to absolute perfection. for when she saw the book, as I had it, got up, the printed and pressed book, lying on her desk in her cart, and saw the title, Dr. Marigold's Prescriptions. She looked at me for a moment with astonishment, then fluttered the leaves, then broke out a laughing in the charmingest way, then felt her pulse, and shook her head, then turned the pages pretending to read the most attentive, then kissed the book to me, and put it to her bosom with both her hands. I never was better pleased in all my life. But let me not anticipate. I take that expression out of a lot of romances I bought for her. I never opened a single one of them, and I have opened many, but I found the romancer saying, let me not anticipate. Which being so, I wonder why he did anticipate, or who asked him to it. Let me not, I say, anticipate. This same book took up all my spare time. It was no play to get the other articles together in the general miscellaneous lot, but when it come to my own article, there, I couldn't have believed the blotting, nor yet the buckling to at it, nor the patience over it. Which again is like the footboard. The public have no idea. At last it was done, and the 2 years' time was gone after all the other time before it, and where it's all gone to, who knows? The new cart was finished, yellow outside, relieved with vermilion and brass fittings. The old horse was put in it, a new one, and a boy being laid on for the cheap jack cart, and I cleaned myself up to go and fetch her. Bright cold weather it was, cart chimney smoking, carts pitched private on a piece of waste ground over at Wandsworth, where you may see 'em from the Southwestern Railway, when not upon the road. Look out of the right-hand window going down. Marigold, says the gentleman, giving his hand hearty, I am very glad to see you. Yet I have my doubts, sir, says I, if you can be half as glad to see me as I am to see you. The time has appeared so long, has it, Marigold? I won't say that, sir, considering its real length. But what a start, my good fellow. Ah, I should think it was. Grown such a woman, so pretty, so intelligent, so expressive. I knew then that she must be really like my child, or I could never have known her, standing quiet by the door. You are affected, says the gentleman in a kindly manner. I feel, sir, says I, that I am but a rough chap in a sleeved waistcoat. I feel, says the gentleman, that it was you who raised her from misery and degradation, and brought her into communication with her kind. But why do we converse alone together, when we can converse so well with her? Address her in your own way. I am such a rough chap in a sleeved waistcoat, sir, says I, and she is such a graceful woman, and she stands so quiet at the door. Try if she moves at the old sign, says the gentleman. They had got it up together o' purpose to please me. For when I give her the old sign, she rushed to my feet, and dropped upon her knees, holding up her hands to me with pouring tears of love and joy. And when I took her hands and lifted her, she clasped me round the neck, and lay there. And I don't know what a fool I didn't make of myself, until we all three settled down into talking without sound, as if there was a something soft and pleasant spread over the whole world for us. A portion is here omitted from the text, having reference to the sketches contributed by other writers, but the reader will be pleased to have what follows retained in a note. Now I'll tell you what I am a-going to do with you. I am a-going to offer you the general miscellaneous lot, her own book, never read by anybody else but me, added to and completed by me after her first reading of it, 8 and 40 printed pages, 6 and 90 columns, Whiting's own work, Beaufort House to wit, thrown off by the steam engine, best of paper, beautiful green wrapper, folded like clean linen come home from the clear starchers, and so exquisitely stitched that, regarded as a piece of needlework alone, it's better than the sampler of a seamstress undergoing a competitive examination for starvation before the civil service commissioners. And I offer the lot for what? For £8? Not so much. For £6? Less. For £4? Why, I hardly expect you to believe me, but that's the sum. £4. The stitching alone cost half as much again. Here's 48 original pages, 96 original columns, for £4. You want more for the money? Take it. Three whole pages of advertisements of thrilling interest thrown in for nothing. Read 'em and believe 'em. More? My best of wishes for your Merry Christmases and your Happy New Years, your long lives and your true prosperities. Worth £20 good, if they are delivered as I send them. Remember, here's a final prescription added, to be taken for life, which will tell you how the cart broke down and where the journey ended. You think £4 too much? And still you think so? Come, I'll tell you what then. Say 4 pence, and keep the secret. So every item of my plan was crowned with success. Our reunited life was more than all that we had looked forward to. Content and joy went with us as the wheels of the two carts went round, and the same stopped with us when the two carts stopped. I was as pleased and as proud as a pug dog with his muzzle blackleaded for a evening party and his tail extra curled by machinery. But I had left something out of my calculations. Now, what had I left out? To help you to guess, I'll say, a figure. Come. Make a guess and guess right. Not? No. 9? No. 8? No. 7? No. 6? No. 5? No. 4? No. 3? No. 2? No. 1? No. Now I'll tell you what I'll do with you. I'll say it's another sort of figure altogether. There. Why then, says you, it's a mortal figure. No, nor yet a mortal figure. By such means you got yourself penned into a corner, and you can't help guessing a mortal figure. That's about it. Why didn't you say so sooner? Yes. It was a mortal figure that I had altogether left out of my calculations. Neither man's, nor woman's, but a child's. Girls or boys? Boys. Aye, says the sparrow with my bow and arrow. Now you have got it. We were down at Lancaster, and I had done 2 nights more than fair average business, though I cannot in honor recommend them as a quick audience, in the open square there, near the end of the street, where Mr. Sly's King's Arms and Royal Hotel stands. Mim's traveling giant, otherwise Picklesson, happened at the self-same time to be trying it on in the town. The gentile was adopted with him. No hint of a van. Green baize alcove leading up to Picklesson in a auction room. Printed poster, free list suspended, with the exception of that proud boast of an enlightened country, a free press. Schools admitted by private arrangement. Nothing to raise a blush in the cheek of youth or shock the most fastidious. Mim swearing most horrible and terrific, in a pink calico pay place, at the slackness of the public. Serious handbill in the shops, importing that it was all but impossible to come to a right understanding of the history of David without seeing Picklesson. I went to the auction room in question, and I found it entirely Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.